up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Thursday, January 17th. This is the, it's not the Pick Six Podcast. This is the Brady Quinn Football Show! I feel bad for anybody. Yeah, my apologies to anybody who listens to this on your early morning commute. You're trying to enjoy your coffee. You're like, good to hear Brinson's dulcet, gravelly smoker cough tones. And then all of a sudden, you're blasted with a, you know,
look at the club, man. Club Dub or club whatever the heck's been going on in the Saints locker room after their win. We got a glimpse of, apparently they've been having a club going on in their place too.
They have. I like that. Ski mask, all kinds of stuff happening. New Orleans, not surprising. I don't know what I was about to ask you. You know what? People, I know. People, this doesn't happen to you because your picture's been plastered on the walls of Tijuana Fats or whatever it is, everywhere. I had a podcast listener was at a bar and sent me a picture of Brady from the bar. It's not a bad picture. Just a,
Tijuana Flats doesn't have a bar. They don't have a bar.
Okay.
They can serve alcohol there, but let's not confuse it for what it is. It is a very nice, clean, Mexican joint. They have good food there, some good burritos, good tacos and salsa and all that good stuff. And, that's pretty much it. I did frequent there every once in a while. Haven't been back in quite some time though.
I think they have those in North, like, I think there's one up the road from my house. I don't think it's not like a just, wherever the hell in Ohio it is, right? Or is it Notre Dame? I mean, like, I think it's a chain, right?
It is a chain. It is a chain. I don't know that it's made its way all the way up to the Midwest, which is really, that's more of the proving ground. Like, typically, if you're a fast food chain, at some point, you started up in the Midwest, and you saw if that demographic of people ended up eating your food. And if it did, you're most, probably wildly successful.
wait, where was this Tijuana Flats in question? Just for the record, somebody DM'd me, was like, I was at this bar, and there's a picture of Brady on the wall. Just thought you'd want to see it. And I was like, oh, I like opened up my phone. And I was like, please be a wasted Brady Quinn, like ripping tequila shots out of like a shot ski or something like that. And no, it's just Brady in a early 2000s.
Like a beanie.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what the hell you were wearing, but I mean, it was, you just looked like
it was cold out, man. I had a beanie on. You're going to get upset about me wearing a beanie.
I'm not, we call them toboggans here in North Carolina.
I call him a toboggan too, but then someone was trying to say, like, isn't that like a sled or something you ride on? I'm like, can it be both? Why do we have to argue about this?
Right. You won't believe who argued with me about that. Prisco and Nick Costas. They're like, you can't call it a toboggan. What are you? You're freaking crazy. You can't. It's like, guys, you know what? You're just ruining everything for everybody. So be quiet. My point.
That's the least surprising thing by the way, that Prisco and Costas would argue about it. But look, the whole discussion about this is about tacos. Okay. That's what I was doing. I was eating tacos. The guy asked me to take a photo with him. I said, okay, I love tacos. I read a book, to my daughter about dragons loving tacos. And even better, you know who else loves tacos? I think the head coach of the New York Jets, Adam Gase. I think he loves tacos too.
Yeah, I love you. You're good at this, Brady. You brought it right back full circle. I got to, for those that don't know, if you haven't seen it yet, I spent like the morning texting my wife about this. There's this video of Adam Gase's press conference, locking for JLC, and I talked about it on Wednesday. It was wild. It was weird. Felt like he was on some sort of, gas station amphetamines or something like that, or just like a bunch of Red Bull. I don't know. Maybe just a bunch of coffee. Who the hell knows? Either way, he goes up there and he sits down with Mike Maccagnan and he starts just, his eyes are wandering everywhere and his head's doing weird things. He's looking all over the place and somebody goes in and puts the Titanic music behind it and then has a taco floating around on the video and Adam Gase following it. And I swear to God, Brady, I mean, like, I'm a dumb idiot. I get it. I've watched that video 450 times and I laugh every time.
It's almost like, I don't know, it's one of those things that's so stupid to watch, like watching a dog chase its tail, but so for some reason it's entertaining. Like, you're like, I don't know, it's kind of fun to watch. Let's see if he ever gets it. I don't think you will. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like that watching it. And look, I gotta be honest, I was in a quarterback room with Adam Gase for a season. He coached wide receivers the year before that. I've always been close with Goose. And I've never noticed him having like those darting eyes. it was very odd, to be blunt. I was taken back by it. I wasn't sure what was going on. I was thinking to myself, is this normal when he's got a hat on? I didn't know if, like, the way the team meeting room is, and I've been to the Jets facility. I was there for half a season. I don't know if he was just, like, overcome by how many people were in the room. So maybe he wanted to make sure he made eye contact with everyone at one point in time. Or maybe there actually was a dancing taco. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's got some allergy prescription that he took that gave him a reaction where he saw tacos. I mean, I don't know. It was a very weird press conference. I did think when you watch it, even without the taco and the music, you can see Mike Maccagnan at one point kind of looks at him like, no, not the dancing taco again. Come on. No. You promised no dancing tacos at the press conference. I just can't get over it. It was the weirdest thing. It's one of the weirder press conferences I've ever seen. What's weirder for you as somebody who, like, if you're a Jets fan or somebody trying to figure out whether or not this is going to work out, what's more concerning? Adam Gase darting all over the place in that press conference, doing weird things, like after answering questions, like, you're just trying to win, and then, like, rolling his eyes like Jay Cutler on steroids into the back of his head, or Ben McAdoo wearing a suit that's 12 sizes too big.
Well, the whole suits on coaches that it doesn't really fit properly. It doesn't look quite right. I mean, you could talk about Ben McAdoo. You can talk about Freddie Kitchens, who just didn't look comfortable at all and wore a baseball cap with a tie. It's never a great look. And then for
really
Adam
not.
Gase, I thought besides his eyes, you know, following the taco, or maybe just again making intimate eye contact with all the media members there who were present, he had a fat knot. To have a tie like that, I don't know who tied that knot for him, but, man, that thing was serious. That thing had a lot of width to it, a lot of girth to it. You don't see too many coaches tie a tie knot that's going to be that big. He really went all in with a big tie knot. So that was actually what stood out to me. But another guy who probably won't wear a suit again for quite some time. I know Mike Florio wrote about it. I think he was, you know, bloviating about not, you know, having these guys have to be in suits because what's the point? I'm kind of actually with him on that one.
Sure.
Even though I took it for clickbait and I actually read the article, I do agree. Like, it probably doesn't make sense for these guys to wear a suit. It's not required. They almost never do it anymore. And it actually doesn't even look like they're as professional as they would look with, like, a cap, a whistle, and their team's apparel on. Like, that would probably look more like their uniform for what their job entails and what they're doing.
You know who I think fits this theory, and I think you'll like this because it hits home for you. Mike Bray, the Notre Dame basketball coach. I think he always hated ties. So he went with that stupid mock turtleneck forever and it looked terrible. And finally one day his kids told him, they're like, Dad, look, we got to sit you down and be honest with you about something. He's like, oh God, what is it? They're like, well, it's his turtleneck. You look like a moron. He's like, oh, okay. They're like, why don't you just wear a blazer with no tie? And he's like, oh, that makes sense. And he started doing it and he started winning. Now he wins. He wins big because he switched and he's comfortable. And so I think you're right. Like, Adam Gase should have showed up with, maybe not a Jets pullover, but he could have gone, you know, like a business casual. He could have gone a blazer and no tie, right? I mean, that'd be fine. I mean, just show up in sweatpants or a jumper. It's Jumpsuit January. Why not?
I'm personally a huge fan of the walking suit. I know that a lot of people probably don't know what that is, but here's what it boils down to. It's essentially a pair of, and in this case, let's say linen because it breathes a little bit more.
Sure.
Mostly offensive linemen, D linemen used to wear this, but they would get these tailored walking suits, as they call them. And it's like linen sort of looking dress pants with essentially a long sleeve button down shirt that match the pants, they're identical. Mm. So it was just like one long piece of linen, almost like linen bed sheets, but it just had like a button-down shirt and what looked to be dress pants with some loafers. And like people used to call that a walking suit. Guys would wear it all the time on the team plans, all that. No tie involved, but it looked close enough to like business attire that it kind of fit the requirement that most teams had for their players wearing suits when they're traveling.
I feel like I've seen Andy Reid in a walking suit before. I need to go back and look at Andy Reid's introductory press conference in 2013. Did he wear a Hawaiian shirt? Cause I feel like he might have. I mean, he comes to these coaches meetings. Yeah, but I'm with you. I'm with you here. I agree. It is like insane. Like, throw on a suit once, you know, once in your career, every time you get hired, is not a huge deal. But hey, you know what? Why not just, you know, why not let them be comfortable and let them speak with the media in the way that they're going to speak with the media after every game and every practice? Anyway, that's
Can we close out just on this sentiment,
sure.
though?
Yeah.
Hawaiian shirts, they get a bad rap.
They do.
I think they look very welcoming, you know, like they seem very inviting. Typically, they light up the room and they make people happy when they see them. I don't know why Hawaiian shirts aren't more widely accepted in the office space. To be considered business attire. We've got one of our, like, I don't know if it's a BA or what exactly his title is, but Ryan Stryker, he wore one the other day down in our studios there in off Cypress Creek in Pompano. And I got to tell you, it brought a smile to my face, and it really led to a warm conversation. So I just want to say to all listeners out there, don't be afraid to buy some Hawaiian shirts, and don't be afraid to wear them into work. I think it makes everyone's day a little bit brighter.
Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We should do that on CBS Sports HQ. You can watch Brady on CBS Sports HQ all the time, basically 24-7. The network is certainly 24-7. CBSSports.com/live. Real sports news for real sports fans. There will be plenty of talk on CBS Sports HQ, Brady, about Antonio Brown. And I don't know if you saw this, because you also do a 3-hour radio show multiple times per week. And as soon as you're done with the radio show, you hop on and do a podcast with me. It speaks volumes to your character that you deal with it all. But also, you know, I mean, I guess they pay you for it. Who knows? At any rate, you may have missed this in all your busy work. Antonio Brown currently, as we're talking, tweeting through it. Right now, someone said, so did you hear what Bruce Arians said about Antonio Brown? This isn't the Antonio that we drafted in 2010. Somebody added Antonio Brown with that quote, because that's how Twitter works. It's full of narcs who like to do that. And Antonio Brown quote tweeted him 20 minutes ago as we're recording this and said, "He didn't draft me. He drafted Emmanuel Sanders, the same guy who missed rehab to go on networks to talk about me on situation he have zero clue!" Exclamation point. Arians now wears kangaroo hats and glasses, kangaroo hats, I guess, crying laughing emojis, but I'm the diva. Done seen it all. Then they say we friends. Stop lying. Wow. What do you think about Antonio Brown tweeting right through the end of his Steelers career?
That's one way to put it. I really felt like this is a relationship that maybe could have been mended or repaired, but it's starting to not look like that. Now, him having a beef with Bruce Arians, it's irrelevant because Bruce is now the head coach for the Tampa Bay Bucks. That just means there's potentially two less teams he's going to play for now, maybe the Steelers as well as the Bucks. But look, the Steelers still have control of his contract, and they're not going to trade him unless they field a certain offer. So Antonio Brown's going to have to essentially do this and put off this public persona that he doesn't want to be there in Pittsburgh and make things so bad that, you know, look, maybe they're willing to go without him for a season. And think about it. I mean, Le'Veon Bell tried to call the Steelers bluff, sat out the entire year. He'll now most likely hit free agency. And so I think because of Le'Veon Bell, it's now led to Antonio Brown and his disgruntlement with the organization to say, all right, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can throw a fit and basically, you know, be unhappy and act like I don't want to be there, and I can go somewhere else if I want to. So maybe Le'Veon Bell and his situation kind of led to Antonio Brown thinking he can do the same thing, and this is the beginning stages of that. I think overall, I'm not sure why he's taking this approach. I don't know what situation he thinks he's going to find himself in that's going to be better than the current one he's at. This is a team that can potentially compete for a Super Bowl. He's got a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger. I'm not sure where this fracture occurred or where it happened, but the bottom line is the grass isn't always greener. Mm.
All right, so expound on that a little bit, the Le'Veon Bell thing. I mean, I guess a couple different perspectives I'm curious about. One, you know, if you're Antonio Brown, you're like, well, look, I mean, Le'Veon threw a huge hissy fit, sat out the whole season. He's going to get to go free into the open market. Like, I'm just going to do what I want. From Antonio Brown's perspective, is that what you're thinking? And then from Ben Roethlisberger's perspective, are you like, hey, guys, what the hell? And then from Mike Tomlin's perspective, are you like, this is not good for me? I mean, like where's all this landing? I mean, whose shoulders it on? And what are you thinking if you're any of those guys?
Well, the Le'Veon Bell scenario, I think, is entirely different in the sense that, you know, he felt disrespected because of his situation where there wasn't a long-term deal offered to him that met what he believed to be the floor for the negotiations because of the franchise tag, you know, that he was going to potentially play under for multiple years. So, look, you could be on either side of the fence on that one, but what I think it led to was this greater sense that, you know, Le'Veon Bell wasn't going to come back purely because of the environment, because of his teammates, because of any sort of sense of loyalty to Ben Roethlisberger or the Rooney family or Mike Tomlin. And he made a business decision. And I think it led to other players in that locker room who maybe felt the same disgruntlement, whether it was about their contract, what they're being compensated, how they're being used, or anything else. It kind of is contagious, and it breeds that into the locker room. So I think that maybe kind of gave way for Antonio Brown to say, you know what, Le'Veon Bell's not here. And, you know, he was able to kind of sit out. Again, he kind of had to, in order to protect himself from taking any further abuse or wear and tear, in hopes of maximizing on the free agent market this year. But in the case of Antonio Brown, maybe he's saying to himself, I want to change the scenery too. I'm tired of dealing with what we've been dealing with. I think that, you know, there's a better opportunity out there to go with another organization and start over. And so maybe the thought and just being in a locker room without Le'Veon Bell, a guy who was his teammate and probably friend before this year, probably led to that thinking creeping into his mind as well. So I don't know that it's really good for anyone, because, again, all the parties involved, I mean, even though the Steelers still have Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington, some other pieces, James Conner's been, you know, great this year, and then they're going to move on. I still look at it for Antonio Brown and say, I don't know what situation he thinks he's going to walk into and be better. Like, if he wants to go to the 49ers, a lot of people have talked about that. Okay, hopefully Jimmy Garoppolo can stay healthy. And outside of that, you're playing in a division where you've got, I would say, two teams right now that are better than you. So you're playing for third place at this point with the Arizona Cardinals. It's not a knock on the 49ers, by the way. I have a lot of respect for Kyle Shanahan. I look at it and think, if that's where you want to go, okay. But you're going to be making less money because of the state income tax there and in San Francisco and how that all works. And then you're going to be going to a team that's competing for third place compared to a team that's been, you know, competing for first place in the AFC North and potentially a spot at going to the AFC Championship game.
And by the way, if you want to play the state income tax angle, if you play for the 49ers or the Rams, you play four games. Right? No, is that right? No, two games. Excuse me. You you don't get an extra game out of state.
Well,
you get two games a year
right,
in California.
Right. I mean, you're playing eight at home, obviously.
Yeah, nine games in California.
You're playing an additional at least one you're playing that you know of against your divisional opponent in the state of California.
And I mean, it does seem like Antonio Brown might not care about who he plays for and how many games that team wins. I do think if you reference the fact that he loses money doing it, he might change his mind. It's wild though. I think he has to be traded at this point, right? I mean, if you're Ben Roethlisberger, don't you want him gone? I mean, do you want him to come back? What do you want as the quarterback of that team?
He's talented enough of a player where you can deal with some of his character flaws. If you can just keep it under wraps. So I don't necessarily want him gone just because what he's tweeting. Who cares? Why are we giving Twitter so much power? Why are we allowing what people say in a nameless, faceless deal to matter so much? I personally, you know, feel like this could all be, you know, mended and solved still, regardless of what we want to perpetuate on a social media platform. I think that stuff's for the birds. So
is that a joke? That was a joke, right?
Yeah, it was a pun.
Okay, it was a good Twitter pun.
Tweet.
That's a good Twitter pun. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a very quick break, and then we will come back and talk about these matchups in the conference championship games.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
All right. So is there any other news you wanted to cover? Did I forget anything, Brady? Sometimes I forget stuff.
Well, I mean, it depends on when we get to Kyler Murray and that whole situation. If you want to wait till after the games or before.
No, let's talk about Kyler Murray right now. That is actually, fun fact, that is the second time this week that I've forgotten I wanted to talk about Kyler Murray. Do you think that Kyler Murray is doing the right thing, even though we don't know what he's doing yet, because I still think he might go play baseball and he might just be bluffing this baseball team into giving him more money.
I think if he wanted to do that, the baseball team, meaning the Oakland Athletics, should have ponied it up already, because now you're really going down the road of him testing the waters of going to the NFL. And I think because of this quarterback draft class and a lot of the question marks about pretty much everyone else, maybe even including Dwayne Haskins, considering he only started 1 year and there's some people that have certain thoughts on him, but it's potentially Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray. You're looking at as your first two quarterbacks taken. And I got to be honest with you, no one's going to have better film than Kyler Murray does this year. He was the Heisman Trophy winner for a reason. I think the biggest knock on him is going to be his height, given that he's sub 5'10". But if you put him in the right situation, much like Russell Wilson in Seattle, you put him in shotgun, you put him under center where he can be a part of the boot game, or he can be in these deep 7-step drop play action pass games, you're far enough from the line of scrimmage where you don't have to worry about finding throwing lanes as a shorter quarterback. So, there's ways of negating it and getting around his size. But the other question is, besides height, is his weight. He's 195. Will he be able to withstand 16 games starting in the NFL and some of the brutal beating that you may take? And then there's the point of, like, this is a kid from, what, the state of Texas. You don't think that somewhere in his mind, if he can be a quarterback, that from the time he was born and started playing sports, that doesn't prioritize itself over baseball? In my mind, it would. And I think, going and riding on a minor league bus and all that would be very fun, because if they were going to pay him that the huge contract they talked about potentially doing, he'd have to be on the 40-man roster. So maybe it's a little different story. But in my mind, I think you can always go football first, then baseball. It'd be tough to go baseball first, then come back to football, especially to sign a contract that's going to be valued somewhere in the first round, because I do believe that's where he's going to get taken.
So you agree our draft expert, Ryan Wilson, your friend, my friend Ryan, believes that he will be a first round pick, and you agree with that? How high, what's his ceiling, what's his floor in the first round?
I think his ceiling's top 10. Wow. And I think his floor could potentially be somewhere in the top 40. So he could drop out of the first round and be somewhere in those next, let's say, top 8 picks of the second round, where someone's going to have to move up to take him if they pass on him in the first round. And that, again, has more to do with its height, people being concerned, because you don't see many guys starting and playing in the NFL that are sub 5'10". I mean, Russell Wilson is sub 6 feet, but I believe he's closer to 5'11". And it doesn't sound like much, but we were talking about a game that's built upon, or was talked about as being a game of inches. So literally in this case, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about height, by the way, too. Nothing else besides that. Get your head out of the gutter, Brinson.
I know you're talking about height. I'm laughing because I think that my driver's license, see if I got it on. Yeah, I got my driver's license on me. Let's see what it says. I bet it has some lie on here. Let's see. Robert Williams Brinson. 5'9". You think I'm 5'9", or is that a lie? It's probably a lie.
I don't know. The combine thing's interesting. Because someone told me the other day, they're like, well, he's 5'9 and 7'8", so he's 5'10". I'm like, no, not how the NFL works. They round down.
Yeah.
So I don't know what exactly your measurement would be, but you might be around 5'9". That might be accurate. I think the more is, you kind of buried the lead. Your name is Rob Williams.
Robert Williams.
Robin Williams. Like you could,
Robert.
Be like Rob Williams.
No, wouldn't that? Oh my God, wouldn't that be awful if my name was Robin Williams?
That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing.
I'd be like the guy who the guy on Office Space who's. Yeah, his name's Michael Bolton and he goes by Mike. It's like,
no talent ass clown.
Yeah, there it is. Nice job. The Kyler Murray thing is interesting too. You mentioned the top 40 part of it. There's actually a case to be made, and it's a weird case, but that if you fall out of the first round, that it's not the end of the world because of the new CBA, which puts a fifth year option on first round picks. And while that fifth year option is a lot of money, it is an extra year of team control. And you saw it with a guy like Derek Carr, and with Russell Wilson, you almost have to extend the guys who aren't first round picks earlier after their third season, because you go into that fourth season and then you have to franchise tag them at $25 million afterwards. And it makes more sense to hammer out the extension before the fourth year if they are a legitimate quarterback in the NFL. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world if he didn't get drafted in the top 32 picks. Just a thought there.
Well, you're actually making a case for, him going to play baseball first, maybe taking a big contract if he wants to go that route. and then coming back and signing a league minimum deal if and when he would want to try to come back. Mm. And when someone brings him on, if he works his way into the lineup where he does start or impresses so much in the offseason that ends up being the guy, then really you're looking at extending him maybe after a year or two. So they've got that window for value, but they have to immediately start thinking, yeah, this dude signed to a 3-year deal. We gotta start getting to him sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's a good point. Interesting. So you could go tank in baseball, then come back and play football, sneak into football with a minimum deal and get that big money contract. It's not a crazy idea. Probably not going to happen. Scott Boras, that doesn't seem like a very Scott Boras approach. Let's talk about these conference championship games, though. I'm curious of your thoughts. What were you more right or more wrong about the teams in the divisional round? Because I was 100% wrong, and I know I talked to you before the games, and I don't remember what you said. I mean, I remember what you said. I don't remember your specific picks.
I was 4-0 in regards to my picks.
And, wow.
And I think the thing I was most surprised by is that the games were as far apart as they were. I didn't see New England blowing out the Chargers the way they did. I mean, they got off to a fast start with the 35-7.5.
Yeah.
Completely dominated that game. And I think the thing that we overlooked, or maybe that I overlooked, was Gus Bradley was going to play similar personnel versus the Patriots, which doesn't make a ton of sense. It did versus Baltimore in the wild card round. But when you're playing your dime packages with six DBs or your 7 DB package, which could have a myriad of names, you're putting smaller personnel on the field. So what do you think the Patriots are going to do? They could still put their 3 wide receivers out there with a tight end like Gronk because they all block well. And they can say, you got a bunch of small guys in the field. We're just going to run the football with Sony Michel down your throat, and then we'll throw from time to time too and mix that in to stay balanced. But that's pretty much what you saw. And they dominated the game with that, never really allowing Joey Bosa or Melvin Ingram to have an impact in the game. So I thought that was pretty impressive by the Patriots.
Well,
I think the thing you noticed was
– yes.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you as a follow-up on that. I'm curious, what is Bob, because it was really annoying and stupid that Gus Bradley's had a great year as the Chargers defensive coordinator, but he played zone and allowed Julian Edelman to carve him up, and he didn't blitz anybody for the first half, and he did that 7 DB package, and Tom Brady destroyed it. So what do the Chiefs do to slow down the Patriots?
Well, quickly, here's the thing that, like, you have to understand. Gus Bradley ran the same system they did in Jacksonville, the same system he ran last year with the Chargers when the Patriots beat him. It was the same system he ran back when he was in the Seattle Seahawks. It's post-high zone. It's man-to-man on the outside, and they switch off a lot of the crossing routes, but really playing more of a zone coverage on the interior, mostly post-high safety. So that's been the scheme that they've gone against, whether it's been Gus Bradley or Dan Quinn when he was defensive coordinator with the Seahawks or head coach with the Atlanta Falcons. Been the same thing, and look, they've had success versus all of them.
Yeah.
So it's been a very similar scheme and game plan they've gone up against, and that's one of the reasons why they had success. Now Bob Sutton's not going to do that at all. He's more of a game plan oriented defensive coordinator, and I think the biggest difference is they have a better interior pass rusher in Chris Jones. So not only do you have Justin Houston, who didn't play in their first matchup in Week 6,
right?
But you've got Dee Ford, who's playing like his hair's on fire in a contract year. And then Chris Jones, who's the second best interior pass rusher to Aaron Donald. So it's a different mix of guys, and you don't have to bring pressure because you've got these matchup issues for most offensive lines. The question is going to be the coverage. And I would have said before the divisional round, man, that's going to be in the favor of the New England Patriots. But when you look at how good they matched up last week versus the Colts, maybe not so much. I mean, that was one of their better performances. Now, granted, they had 2 weeks to prepare for their opponent and rest and all that. But I think it will be interesting to see how effective the secondary will be, especially if Eric Berry is able to come back and play too. He's been practicing this week. We'll see if he can come back in that secondary and help add some additional coverage to Gronk, who did lead the team receiving for the Patriots in that game, even though it was only 3 receptions earlier this year.
Okay, and what do the Patriots do, because the Patriots, again, you mentioned they piled up and they ran the crap out of the football. It would seem to me, given the opponent, and the Chiefs have similar yardage allowed per game to running backs out of the backfield in terms of receiving. The Chiefs were very bad against the run, 32nd by advanced metrics against the run, and really just the eye test and all that. They weren't good against the run. How do the Patriots, is it same sort of offensive approach here, play the run and try and win in a blizzard, or what are you doing here?
Well, the weather report keeps looking better and better in Kansas City. So I don't know if it's going to be as cold or as bad as we thought. I don't know if that's going to change much of the game plan, though, in the sense of they still want to run the football. I mean, you always want to stay balanced, but you also want to limit the amount of touches that Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs defense can have. I mean, look, if I was going to give you one bullet point on each side of the football, it'd be this. I think if you're looking at the Chiefs defense, they're really trying to accomplish, I'll go back in my word, two things. Can't let Mahomes out of the pocket. He's hard enough as it is to keep in there. But also when he creates and buys time, it makes it even more difficult to cover Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, who are incredibly athletic and have a lot of speed at each of their positions. So they can't allow him out of the pocket. And the other thing is they're going to have to be really, really good with their disguise, their coverages, and when they choose to take a chance and blitz. Because it's either going to be blitz or drop eight, or maybe something in between at times. But that's going to be the deal. They're going to have to mix, and they're going to have to try to keep Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. That Pat's offense is going to have to run the football, but they're going to have to do a lot of what they're doing before and just long, methodical drives and not allowing those pass rushers to get involved and then try to get the ball out of his hand quick, try to utilize the screen game, try to utilize some of the mismatches on James White, because he's the one guy that definitively you can say can be a game changer for them. With his mismatch, only because Gronk just hasn't been that healthy this year. And so unless all of a sudden he goes to the TB12 clinic and they give him some sort of special tonic and he's going to look like a different player, I think they're going to do a better job covering him this time around.
Unless they rub avocado oil all over his back, he's probably in trouble. Yes, avocado oil.
Yeah, his back.
Yeah, his back with avocado oil. I don't know why I'm saying that over and over again. Defensively, the Patriots, you mentioned, like, you got to try and contain Patrick Mahomes. I was floored that the Chargers just didn't change anything, like just run a screen or a cross or route or anything, Kinwiz and Hunt, anything to make life. Phillip Rivers check down into something other than a 7-step drop and a deep pass. What is happening here? You can't do that against Patrick Mahomes, right? You can't go with the cover zero blitz party, right?
No, I think you can. Oh. Actually, I think if you feel confident in your ability to rally up and make tackles, yeah, you can. In fact, like a blitz zero look isn't the worst thing in the world, only because here's what you know you're going to have a free defender. You know he has to get the ball out of his hand quick. Mm-hmm. What you don't know is if he's going to make the right decision, and you don't know if your player is going to be able to make a tackle if they do complete it in space. And that's why you don't use it a lot versus the Kansas City Chiefs, because you're concerned about that. And I think the one thing where you look at Patrick Mahomes and go back to his days in college that you see a lot of in the Big 12, drop eight coverage. It happens more and more. You see more three-down sets and more teams that are drop eight. When if they do rush a fourth, sometimes they'll delay it. Mm. So they'll have their three-man rush, and they'll have a spy, or they'll have a guy kind of hang around the line of scrimmage and see if Mahomes is going to try to take off. And then once he, once the uncovered guard kind of declares, or center in some cases, and once he goes to help or look for help on one side or the other, then that fourth player will add to the rush and try to pressure the quarterback. So I think that may be something that you see a little bit more too, along with a mix of coverages as well.
All right, so hit me with it. Who you got? Who's the Brady Quinn special? Chiefs -3. You don't have to give me who you think will cover. Just give me a score total. Over-under, I think, is back up to 55.5. Started at like 59, fell down to 54.5 because of this weather, now creeping back up. What do you think, what's the outcome in Arrowhead on Sunday?
As it currently hits, I think it hits the over. I think there's going to be enough points scored in this one for it to be competitive. I see the game going one of three ways. I do think it's going to be tight.
Yeah.
But I think if there's going to be a team that's going to win via a blowout, I think it's going to be the Chiefs. So, that being said, you think that I'm going to lead with the Chiefs and that they're going to win this game. I cannot pick against the Patriots. I would kick myself next week when we talk again if that was the case, and I'm not going to do that now because I know their history. I know it's been 8 straight to the AFC Championship, 13, 16 years, however many Super Bowl trips they've been on. It's hard for me to pick against a Belichick, Brady-led team, so I'm not going to. I think somehow the Patriots find a way of winning this game, but it will be close if they do win.
I was trying to find this on Pro Football Reference while you were talking, and I couldn't do it because – you can't search, you can't filter individual player games by temperature. What's the coldest game you ever played in? I guess college or pro, because, man, it gets pretty friggin' cold up there in old South Bend.
No, I played in the Thursday night game against the Pittsburgh Steelers in Cleveland, and that was the coldest game I believe I ever played in. I think with the wind chill, it might have been close to zero or maybe negative. The temperature was definitely down in the low teens, if not single digits. And I just remember the wind was howling. So that was the coldest game I ever played in. It was miserable. The wind was so bad in one direction, it was really tough to throw against the wind. You almost had to just throw exclusively with the wind. And the reason why I say that is when it gets that cold, what becomes an issue is your grip, because you can't feel your fingertips as well. You could put on a glove, but to be honest with you, unless you practice it a bunch, it's hard to put on a glove because it changes your release point. You know, typically they're pretty tacky, so you end up holding on the football a little bit longer. So when you first start throwing the glove, you'll yank a lot of footballs into the ground because it's messing up where you're used to releasing the football. So you got to practice with it. You got to feel comfortable with it. And even that's not going to keep your hand warm enough. So I was one where I always wore one on my offhand, didn't on my throwing hand, never felt comfortable with it. But then your hand gets numb. So you can't feel your fingertips when you grip the football. And that becomes tough when you combine it with wind, because if you're not able to spin the football through the wind, it's going to knock it down. It's going to look like someone opened up half of your Christmas gift and then threw it into like someone's huge blow dryer. And it's just going to get knocked down to the ground. Tumbling in pieces. So that's kind of how I'd compare it, or that's how I'd look at it. And it's, you know, I don't know if the wind's going to be that bad there from playing in Kansas City for a year. There could be somewhat of a swirling wind, so it just kind of depends. But that's how the coldness and wind will affect the passing game in this one. But, yeah, I think that Thursday night game versus Pittsburgh is definitely the coldest I've played in.
You want to hear some fun facts about that Thursday night game against Pittsburgh that you played in? I didn't play in, but that you did. Do you know how long it took you guys to play that game? Less than 3 hours.
No, how long?
2 hours and 56 minutes. Let's get the hell out of here, boys. You guys didn't win. You didn't win a lot of games that year, but you won that one 13-6 over the Steelers. You put this team on your back. You went 6 of 19 for 90 yards and toppled Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. I can't imagine. And in the temperature, this is what, like, you're underselling it. It was wind chill, -6, wind 25 miles an hour. I couldn't stand out in there. In like, were you wearing stuff under your uniform? What were you doing? Were you rocking long underwear?
Yeah. You were the long tights, all that kind of stuff. You probably have your jacket on, you know. It wasn't as big as Tom Brady's jacket, but you're on a heated bench, all that good stuff. But there's not much you can do. And again, like, it, not a great passing day, not really fun to be a part of that. But, you know, again, it was tough catching, too. You know, there was a number of drops in that game that impacted. But we ran the football well enough. We didn't turn the football over. And for us, it was huge because we ended up knocking Pittsburgh out of the playoffs that year. So that's always the little added benefit to that sort of win.
Yeah, and look, Ben, I mean, I'm joking about the percent. Like, anytime you're in 25-mile-an-hour wind, -6 degrees, you're not going to complete a bunch of passes. Ben Roethlisberger, also not a very good day, had barely creeped over 200 yards. By the way, they didn't give you enough help in Cleveland that year, Brady. Great guys that you played with, Jerome Harrison, Josh Cribbs, Muhammad Massaquai, Chancey Stuckey, former Clemson star. But come on, give Brady some help, Cleveland. What the hell was that about?
That was Eric Mangini's by design. So you can talk to Eric Mangini about that.
Well, maybe he'll be doing a media rounds at the Super Bowl, so we can talk to him on HQ or something like that. All right, the other game, Saints and Rams, weather, not a factor. It's in the dome in New Orleans. I take it you had the Rams and the Saints winning in your picks. I don't know what the hell I was thinking with the Rams Cowboys thing. I sort of fell in love with the Cowboys for like the first time all year. And it was so dumb because Sean McVay, master genius of the world, had 2 weeks to prepare, and the Cowboys hadn't seen this Rams offense in terms of the linebackers following all the eye candy and stuff like that. And it just completely perplexed them. How much does having seen the Saints, or how much does the Saints having seen the Rams already, help New Orleans prep for this Rams offense?
Well, here's the thing is they've actually seen each other twice this year. Week 4 preseason in New Orleans.
Wow, great
lost
call.
That one. The Rams did 28-0, 45-35 in week 9. And that game was closer, by the way, than the score indicated. So the Rams haven't had any success there in New Orleans. So it's their third trip to NOLA. And we'll see what, you know, what's going to be the difference this time around. That's going to help either the Rams win for the first time or the Saints will continue to be dominant. I mean, a couple things you have to identify is first time around, Noah Kiptolib. Why is that significant? Well, Michael Thomas went off for 12 receptions for 211 yards. I think Wade Phillips will have a different game plan from a coverage standpoint this time. Dante Fowler just joined the team from Jacksonville. It was his first game as an LA Ram. He is really settled in now as a legitimate edge rusher, and I think that's become even more impactful, and it's helped out the coverage too with his pass rushing ability. So that's one of those changes. If you're looking at the Saints, you have to take into account that Sheldon Rankins isn't going to be there.
Yep.
He's a big-time game changer in the interior as far as the pass rush, second on the team in sacks, also good against the run. It's one of the reasons why DeMario Davis, A.J. Klein, and Alex Anzalone have been so good this year for him. So they could very, very much miss him. Onyemata did a decent job subbing in last week. We'll see if he can hold the fort down this week. And then, you know, you're looking at a Saints team that's got Andrews Pete playing with, I believe he had surgery on his hand. Didn't look great last week, part of it because he's playing through so much pain, obviously not 100%. That's never good when you're working against a defensive front with Michael Brockers, Adavigan Sue, Aaron Donald, and then Dante Fowler, just to name a few. So we'll see how the battle of the trenches works out, because going back, just quickly capping on last weekend, what we noticed was teams that got rest worked out pretty well for them. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, we feel like teams build momentum in the wild card round. Newsflash, they don't, okay? They don't build momentum. They just get more beat up. They're already beat up as it is after 16 games over 17 weeks. So you're going into week 19 now thinking that's momentum. It's not. So we learned our lesson there. I think we realized these are the four best teams squaring off. And so now it's going to be interesting to see who wins the battle at the line of scrimmage in this matchup, only because I thought that Rams dominated the defensive front for the Cowboys, and then obviously Sue and Donald had their way with the interior of the offensive line for the Dallas Cowboys, stymieing Zeke Elliott's rushing attack. And on the flip side, you look at the Saints, even though they struggled early in those first two drives, they've got it together defensively after that, really settled in, and their offensive line played well enough versus a defense that, you know, didn't have Fletcher Cox for the entire game, but he played a part. Bennett was in there as well. It's kind of in and out to get banged up. But either way, they got the job done. They did good enough, and that's all that matters. So I think this matchup is really going to come down to who wins at the line of scrimmage. And I give the edge to New Orleans. I think if the Rams can't run the football the way they have with Todd Gurley and C.J. Anderson,
please, it's okay.
It could end up being a long day for Jared Goff.
I got two questions about the quarterbacks here. One with Jared Goff, who you mentioned. He hasn't been great. He was fine against the Cowboys. I mean, he made throws when he needed to. It was a messy track out there. It rained. You know, we talked about the weather in Kansas City, but it poured in Los Angeles. The game still managed to go over, and there were a lot of points. But Goff wasn't great, and he hasn't been great on the road all year. The Rams haven't been as good on the road. He hasn't ever played a road playoff game. I mean, this is his third playoff start in just his third year. But both of them were at home, and so now his first road playoff game is a conference championship in New Orleans. I mean, is that one where a guy, even with his, you know, he's a pretty cool head with a smart head coach. Isn't that sort of a you're getting tossed in the deep end here, pal, situation, right?
It's never fun to have your first being played in this manner, right? You'd wish it was the wildcard round or something else.
Right.
But in this case, you know, I think I look at it and think, again, if he's got the ability to hand the football off a few times and have some, you know, productive gains, move the sticks, he'll be fine. And they're going to base some stuff off play action pass. And I'm sure Sean McVay will have some easy completions built in early, especially versus a defense that's given up some yards in the passing game. So I think that's going to showcase early on. But if he gets off to a rocky start, I wouldn't be surprised if the Saints don't pounce and don't jump on them. You better believe Sean Payton saying we can't start off slow like we did last week versus the Eagles. This is a different team. It's a different animal with the Rams. We can't start off slow like that. We've got to figure a way of jumping out to a lead and taking care of business.
Yeah, I mean, like if, you know, the Eagles – we're up 14-0, and were it not for a Marshawn Lattimore interception followed by a very, very ballsy fake punt by Sean Payton that I wasn't surprised by, despite its ballsiness, maybe the Eagles are up even more. The Rams are a team where if they get up 14-0 on you, you know, the Eagles couldn't run the ball at all. The Rams will lean on that offensive line, lean on Todd Gurley, and they were opening up massive holes against the Cowboys. With Breeze, are you – with what you saw from him, because he missed two obvious touchdown throws, Brady, are you worried that Drew Brees' age is happening? I don't know. He didn't look as crisp as he has. He just didn't look as crisp throughout the whole game against the Eagles, whether it was pressure or whether it was just throwing the ball down the field. I mean, to me, both he and Tom Brady looked a little off in terms of throwing their deep ball in that divisional round.
He looked shook. There's no other way of putting it. Wow. Like after he threw the interception, that underthrown ball, he just had this look on his face that like something didn't look right. Something looked off in his game, or I don't know, personally, something was going on, but something didn't look right. And, you know, he ended up settling in, and I think it largely, you know, helps out when you can run a fake punt in your own territory on fourth and inches or whatever, fourth and a foot, fourth and one. That helps, you know, create that spark for you. But something looked off for him. And I think maybe it's just the fact that he just turned 40. He realizes this is probably close to the end. This might be his last opportunity at getting back to this point. I mean, besides last year, when you think you've got that game wrapped up in Minnesota, Marcus Williams takes a bad angle. Next thing you know, Stephon Diggs is running the end zone. There goes your chance at trying to go to the NFC Championship game. So I think he realizes the end's coming sooner rather than later. And there's a lot of pressure that comes with that, especially when you start off a game, you know, thinking positive thoughts, going over, the scripted plays in your mind before, walking through them all week in practice, and then your first throw ends up being an interception. Yeah. Like, that's not the way you want to start off with. And so I think that can toy with you mentally. And then the one thing every single quarterback battles, doesn't matter how good they are, doesn't matter how old they are, how experienced they are, is they all battle themselves and their mind. That short-term memory, the ability to move on from a negative play and forget about it, learn from it, forget about it, but move on to the next play. Everyone battles with that more so than anything else.
Mm, good stuff. All right, we'll get you out of here on this. You get to pick one taco that you will eat for the rest of your life. Choose the shell, the meat, and the toppings. What would your taco be?
Oh, my gosh.
That wasn't in the show
prep. I would go with a corn tortilla, but it's got to stay together. You know, the soft ones kind of fall apart a little bit.
I don't like
but something about the corn flavoring.
Yeah. You can go crunchy corn. I like crunchy corn.
No. Get off me with the crunchy corn. I hate that crap.
All right,
it's got to be a flour or corn tortilla. Yeah, okay. You got to go soft. Come on, man. There's a reason why the soft tacos. They wouldn't have invented them if they weren't better than the crunchy ones. Crunchy ones clearly came first. So you've got that, and you've got to go with like a carnitas or some sort of barbacoa or ground beef, right? Like some sort of beef, something with that can hold the flavor and hold the juice. Give me some like lettuce, tomato, cheese, some salsa, some jalapenos. What else? Well, let's throw some guac on there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else you can throw in. Maybe beans is a little bit too much.
You're approaching burrito status here. It's like, all right, some beans and some rice.
And I don't know that dancing burrito would be moving around as much as that taco was at Adam Gase's press conference. So that's the only issue there.
All right. I want whatever Adam Gase had before my tacos. Tweet us your favorite taco. Brady Quinn is at 3RD_goal. I'm at Will Brinson. You can tweet the Pick Six Pod with your taco thoughts if you want, or your football thoughts. And we got only 3 games left in the season, Brady, and we'll talk to you next week after 2 of them are over.
Sounds good. Enjoy the games. Enjoy those tacos.